Jared Murphy is the author of It's Not Aliens, Worse, It's Us, Discovering Our Lost History. So who were these advanced ancient ancestors of ours? Were they the Cro-Magnons, the Denisovans, the Neanderthals? Any clues as to who they might have been?
Yeah, it's very interesting because there is this consensus. It's so funny that all these different fields of science have a vertical where they just don't cross each other yet. The lines have to cross. You can't have engineered soil all over the earth. You can't have the same construction methods. And here we are with a period of time that even standard academia is saying, and of course always being conservative. So let's just say it really more coincides not with the young, well, it doesn't coincide with the Younger Dryas, but the number they give is around 50,000 years ago, they know for sure, Denisovan, Neanderthal, and a mystery 14% human all were breeding together. And because of the number that's thrown out, and more so because of my research, why don't we just go post-apocalyptic supervolcano blowing up and, you know, a lot of topsy-turvy events, hydrostatic plate shifting, the cities in Cuba, you know, off the coast of Cuba go underwater, the Ricot structure is devastated, Lake Titicaca ends up at 12,600 feet, you end up with a lot of survivors that were not in these very mysterious rock cut, laser cut, well, I'm just using the word laser, but very well-hewn underground tunnel and bunker systems, if you want to call them that. And what we have on the surface are survivors. And we have this image of Neanderthal. We know that they were denser boned, stronger. They had bigger brains, yet they're drawn artistically. It's so hard to get that image of an ape-like person. But they had bigger brains. And we describe them in terms of this approved, again, theory, a doctrined theory of evolution. But yet, Denisovan, Neanderthal, and a mystery 14% of humanity that we do not have eyes on, which, to your point, could they be the Paracas? Could they be other elongated skulled humans that we refuse? For all of you listening, standard academia out there, everyone's 6 degrees of separation from somewhere. There, the Paracas are there. You have one suture line in the head, a different location for the spinal column, a different location for the arterial entries into the foramen, into the brain. These are not, and based on some genetic testing, possibly from Crimea and not from Paracas, not from Peru. But either way, there are elongated skulled statues from Egypt to Middle Europe to mimicking tribes doing it. So is it possible that if they got serious about genetic testing, if you're serious about our history, and it's time for us to grow up about it and not cling to these like Clovis first in America, it's ridiculous. And, I mean, there's really no polite way to say it anymore. So now we have the ability to do nuclear DNA testing. We don't even need a bone. We need sediments. We're doing nuclear DNA testing of the flora and fauna of Doggerland. We have the ability to test DNA now without needing a tooth. So before, we were very limited. But nuclear, the advent of this, and really the articles and the papers that are being published, even from the Max Planck Institute that have come out, about nuclear DNA testing has created a field now where we have the ability to test and know why. Was it 50 or was it closer to 70,000 years ago? When did Denisovan, Neanderthal, and humans and a mystery 14% human start mixing? And is it that these are different sets, like a Lord of the Rings kind of a, we're drawn to these epic fictional tales? Is it because there's a genetic truth in it that we remember at some level that there was this experience of different giants in the sense of maybe 8 or 10 foot tall people? Meanwhile, the constant stories of like the Cherokee moon-eyed people the Honolulu and the Hawaiians having little people, the leprechauns of Europe, you know, of England, of Ireland. And I apologize for everyone listening to the train going by.
I love the train going by. That's all right. That's live radio.
Well, great, because I studio out of right off the train yards, which seems like a bad choice for doing radio interviews. So here we are. Well, I do it for all my interviews, whether it's Us or Conflict or you name it, where I'm constantly with the trains, and I appreciate you, Richard, liking the train because it's so loud.
I'm just about 200 yards from the busiest Canadian National Railway corridor in Canada. So every once in a while, you'll hear my windows rattle as well.
Yeah, and this building I'm in, and in fact, in reference to soil, I'm in the old 100-year-old Northrop King building, which is literally the seed company for much, in fact, into Canada. I mean, I'm in Minnesota. The Northrop King Seed Company for over 100 years provided a lot of the seeds for farmers around our country and into Canada, and the NK symbol still exists, but I'm in a 110-year-old, million-square-foot, four-story building that used to distribute seeds for farmers. But, so back on point of genetics, we have a very mysterious thing with just the Paracas, and what is interesting is their genetic structure. You don't just eliminate a suture line. You can bind a baby's head, but we have a certain look to our skull. The Paracas don't have that. They have
They've got one suture line, and we've got, what, three?
Yeah, and they have one. Right. And they're born that way. And
yeah, it's not cradle boarding. It's not, some cultures maybe tried to emulate that through cradle boarding, but this
exactly.
is, as you're saying.
And so we have a massive... See, all of these, whether it's engineered soil, stone spheres, the math, and what we've done is we've detached ourselves. You literally have to have blinders that are on all four sides of your eyes and only with one eye open, staring at one fact at this point, for you to not say that we have grossly underestimated. With the LIDAR scans of Guatemala, just as an example, these are dynastic from what we're indicating. We're seeing... Dynastic peoples are Egyptians, Mayans, Aztecs, Olmecs, Toltecs, Harappan, go east, wherever you want to go. We have
Sumerians.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You have adapting cultures, all basically repairing, managing, and rebuilding megalithic structures. No one in the course of construction starts with a 1,000-ton stone and then goes down to a mud brick, and then adds a 1,000-ton stone, or 500-ton stone, or an 800-ton stone. You don't build like that. That's not the same people. Even at Göbekli Tepe, same thing. Large.
Or put a thatched roof on it.
Right. I love that. Everything. They know how to cut massive 25-foot, 30-foot megalithic stones, but hell, they don't know what to do with wood. That's an impossible task. And then they finish everything off with river rock and crumbly stuff. I mean, you see, and again, you have, my other favorite thing is you dig up 5% of a site, and you now have 100% conclusions. Why don't we get more than 5%? Why don't we keep digging?
Right. So the idea here, then, if I'm understanding this correctly, Jared, is you had these advanced humanoids, whether they were the Denisovans or the Neanderthals or the Paracas or a mixture, crossbreeding and so forth, that had incredible technology. But at the same time, you had still, the hunter-gatherers, the foragers, the people that were wearing the fur clothing and were, hunting with spears and so forth. They sort of coexisted just the same way as today we have cell phones and satellites, and yet there are in remote places in the Amazon, there are tribes that have been virtually untouched by civilization.
Absolutely. And they still are experiencing and using, herbal and whether they've developed it themselves or were also obtaining it through ancient teachings, they have remedies, and there's Eastern medicines, including, some sort of a depletion or a descending and a mystifying of sciences, right, including acupuncture. But in Zimbabwe, when I was in South Africa last year, I met a great guy that he's from Zimbabwe, and the tribes that he's with, they just literally call it a wrong invention. It's not that you didn't invent it. It's not that it doesn't work. It's not that you didn't, like the hydrogen bomb. That's a wrong invention. Cell phones, a wrong. It doesn't actually connect us or connect you. It seems like it does. But they have a lot of terms for living out of sync with what they're calling a natural way. But when you've been isolated, left out above ground after a massive worldwide or significant cataclysm, and you weren't part of that advanced society, the adaptation of Denisovan, Neanderthal, mystery, 14% human, and humans as we know them, all mixing together in a survivor mode, having children, rebuilding societies, we literally have this entire window between 75,000 and the Younger Dryas that we don't speak about. It's hard enough right now for us to get our head around, well, there was definitely a massive cataclysm in that 11.5 to 13,000 range, and here we are trying to piece our lives back together from the last 6 or 8,000 years. But it's very clear that in this period, we're looking at megalithic construction, including Göbekli Tepe, and megalithic, mysterious, we call them standing stones, like at Karnak or Stonehenge, and all the henges all over. We have large megalithic, what are really likely the remnant, and not all of them, because the confusion is mimicking tribal and also high technology societies that consider themselves benevolent or, I guess, uninterested in disturbing these tribes. We have to assume that there's always been tribes or peoples that have lived outside of a higher technology society. There's no difference between you and I having the technology we have, and like you said, these tribes, whether it's the rainforest, the deserts, the Arctic regions, they're living the way they did 50,000 years ago, but maybe they were living the way they did 100,000, 200, 300, 400,000 years ago. They're living the same way, and we have actually been the ones that have fallen and risen and fallen and risen, and the societies don't mix, or they have, and we're seeing it in those genetic evidences. But as we now get into nuclear DNA testing, we are finding that the Paracas and these elongated skulled humans, Denisovan, Neanderthals, we don't really have a good idea in the world of what you're taught now, which is, well, we have linearly progressed from tree-swinging monkey into, rock-banging caveman into where we are today. There's no room, despite incredibly strong evidence from our paleoanthropological record that Michael Cremo presents in Forbidden Archaeology, easily showing Australopithecus living simultaneously with Homo erectus, simultaneously living with anatomically correct humans, which from the minute we stopped, like you said, putting archaeology, it wasn't archaeology, it was art history. It always confused me my first year of college. Wait a minute, it's history or art history? You're digging up a statue to stick on the Victorian mantle or in a museum, or are you digging it up to find history? We dug it up to put it on the mantle, throw a statue in a garden. Nobody was concerned about the history, and they built the story of our past before they took it seriously. But the minute they did, and in the 1800s, when they started digging up and they're like, well, here's an anatomically correct human, not in a intrusive burial, but in situ, in the Red Crag, 5-million-year-old, 3-million-year-old layer of earth, and here at Table Mountain, and there's more than one Table Mountain, but this one's in California during the Gold Rush, 60-million-year-old, there's a body of evidence in standard academia, starting in the 1800s, of finding anatomically correct human body parts in layers of earth that were not sloughed in, magically placed there to confuse us. It's showing that we have a long, long history, and the lower we dig with engineered soil, and the lower we dig with the fundamental, literally, in quotes, the foundations of these constructions, we are finding, as we look at human abilities that are being reactivated, superhumans like Wim Hof, that our ability to...
The Iceman.
Yeah, and I got to meet him the first time he ever came to America. He was in San Francisco. He came, and I booked a ticket, and the four of us went. I had no idea who he was. I have a friend with a spinal problem. He said, you got to do this. You consciously control your immune system.
And this is the guy that runs marathons on the Arctic ice in bare feet, or is impervious to hypothermia.
Yeah.
So what are you suggesting, that he somehow retains the genetic makeup of some of these advanced ancient humans, whether Denisovans or Neanderthal, that he's got, like, I don't know, cellular memory of that ability?
We not only have those abilities. When I met Wim, I had never heard him before, but, and I won't say it on air, but everyone can interpret, but he quite says, uses an expletive, and he says, demystify. He goes, you must demystify. We have these abilities. We've always had these abilities, but we've forgotten. And through a series of his own life experience, he reactivated those, and he teaches. He's been studied at hypothermia departments, like at the University of Minnesota, many universities around the country. I'm a Stanford neurologist. The research that they're doing and the techniques he's sharing, along with I've not met Stieg Severinsen, but there's another Netherlands guy that has breathology. But between a combination of meditation using a direct breathing technique, you can regrow an energy system that's based in what's called brown fat. It's an instant heat energy source that not only can you control your heat, you can control your cooling, you can control your inflammatory response, you can have what is mystically described as conscious control of your entire autonomic nervous system, your spinal column and its connections to the organs. And he's climbed Mount Everest in shorts. He's run those marathons barefoot, 20 below zero, barefoot in shorts. And more importantly, the inflammatory response system and being able to control that is part of a higher functioning system, including synesthesias, the ability to hear a number, see a color, or see a color, taste something, or see a
number. All right, we've got to take a time out here. Jared, at the bottom of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines, take questions and comments going into the next half hour. And I want to ask you also whether, you know, there may be remnants of this advanced civilization still around somewhere. Do they constitute a breakaway civilization, for example? Are they responsible for the modern day UFO phenomenon? Jared Murphy, the author of It's Not Aliens, Worse, It's Us, Discovering Our Lost History, is with us. And the YouTube channel, Jared, is that It's Not Aliens?
Yeah, and I co-host Conflict Radio. That's on YouTube also. That there's about 50 shows that you can hear me on, but Not Aliens on YouTube, notaliens.com. And, of course, you can find me on my Rockfin channel, Not Aliens.
All right. So now, at the risk of getting too far out over my skis, let me ask you, is it possible, or do you have a theory as to whether these ancient, advanced ancient civilizations survived? I mean, I know some remnants exist in all of us, perhaps, but they continue to exist. They may be responsible for the modern day UFO phenomenon. In other words, they constitute a breakaway civilization.
Yeah, and in a sense, and for everyone out there, is it the obvious question is to, is there possibly UFOs? I'm from another planet or somewhere else. That's certainly possible, but you have to leap very far away from our own history to look at the remnant. Again, not only our superhuman abilities that we're rediscovering now, like the Wim Hof stuff we talked about, but from the engineered soil on, and the Paracas themselves, and Neanderthal, Denisovan, and every other thing that we haven't quite sorted out yet, that the advanced civilization that was here, think of it more like a group of 5,000 or 6,000 people on a cruise ship or an aircraft carrier. They crash. They're the only people left on Earth. Does somebody know how to work metal but not a forge? Does somebody know how to program a cell phone but not how to build a crystal motherboard infused, you know, I-core processing motherboard? Do they know how to work with a computer? Do they know how to create the engineering or machining? Do they, you know, drilling through a plate is a lot different than creating the drill bit. And the number of lost technologies, if there was one, there's clearly a similar building technique on every continent. By the way, we haven't even touched on it, but above water. The majority of the world, 60 to 75,000 years ago, was below. Right now, they're offshore, these cities and these locations, places like Doggerland, they're all underwater. So the snapshot of the world that would have involved this advanced society is well underground, well underwater, and also underground. And the survivors would have been picking up technologies that they might be well aware of. And just having that construct in your mind and having a word for it is different than starting from scratch and not reinventing it from just having no idea. So we're talking about people that may have come out of a long-term survival situation, finding dynastic peoples have adapted or readapted large, vast areas of the continents, and then having to reevaluate their technology and redevelop. Well, you have UFOs, but the assumption is, well, they must be anthropological. They're here studying from another place. But we have some very early concepts as we've relearned about quantum mechanics, 3D printing, like our early stories, and this is a good one for people. When you're self-experimenting, when you're self-exploring, when you're working this out for yourselves, question to ask yourself, when you hear a story that interdimensional space-traveling aliens have come here for minerals, the more you understand about quantum mechanics and spintronics and nanobots, and The Singularity Is Near, I think, is a pinnacle work still. Ray Kurzweil's The Singularity Is Near can explain for people who might have no interest in nanotechnology that not only did we have Wi-Fi, remote-controlled nanobots between 50 and 150 atoms in size, functional, in 2008. But we think of nanobots as a single little robot, but the reality is think of them as clouds and dust and factories of nanobots built out of subatomic particles. And we were doing this in the last 15 years, and it represents if you are an interdimensional space-traveling alien and you come to a planet for gold or fill-in-the-blank mineral, that's a very low-tech idea of our level of technology and understanding of these stories, these post-dynastic stories we tell ourselves about why an alien would come here. So when you look at our existing technologies and the reality that if this was home to a much more advanced human civilization, and after surviving great cataclysms, and also possibly either out of benevolence or a desire to rebuild, even the stories of Atlantis are not about one city, it's about a civilization. They might be the last time after a massive, 75,000 year ago supervolcano, then years of recovery, and then the Younger Dryas happens, and yet again, it's just another massive wipeout, where now the story of Atlantis could be the story, again, of a 10-city civilization that may have been the last time that simpler dynastic Egyptians, Etruscans, or Tartarians, which are never talked about, yet they're these early humans that were just left on the surface all along that had mixed with Denisovan and Neanderthal, and even the Paracas. They're from Crimea. It's like they moved to the beach in Peru just to, like, make textiles and get high and say, whatever we did for the last million years didn't work, and so we're going to chill, call it a day, because, you know, like, consider them the first advanced ancient Mennonites, or, you know, in all respects of a society that chose to shun a modern way but live amongst themselves in a simpler way. We have an advanced society that rebuilds slowly, and we have these tic-tacs. We have these objects that have been cited not even in the last 100 years. Wallace Wagner's book just recently, Crossing the Crevasse, just came out. Yep. Discussing the, even in Roman times and further back, biblical references to, and of course the Book of Enoch, but other references. We have always seen UFOs, and we easily say, well, they're from somewhere else, because we don't have a technological history that would show that advancement would be here. But it's not because it's not here. It's that we haven't been in a place yet. And it's really just, I think, our linear path. It's just how we've grown to where we are today. I think that's one of the reasons. But we're seeing it now because of the speed by which we've adapted new technology. I think the story about your mother is the perfect illustration of that. 96 years, what's happened just in our time frame to technology in 96 years is significant. And to look at an advanced zero-point turning F-22 fighter jet jamming Tic Tac that can fly off weapon screen at least Mach 25-ish is what the colonel said, I think. That is a technology and anti-gravity. When you discount any advanced secret military programs, when you have the military admitting and this disclosure that's coming in the next few weeks, which at least in writing only is going to be dates and times of UFO incidences, but the reality is people are more prepared to hear it's from somewhere else rather than the title of my book. It's not
even I agree. I got to work in this. I want to work in a couple calls here, Jared, before we run out of time. People are anxious to speak with you. So let's go to Austin. Brendan is on the wildcard line. Brendan, welcome.
Hello, guys. Thank you so much. I'll try to be quick, get some other people on. I'm always nervous when I get on, so sorry about that. But so you're talking about with energy that they had advanced knowledge of energy, math, and that they were using this to build giant constructions. And I wanted to know what your take on if they had advanced knowledge of sacred geometry, which is basically just math that is repeated throughout the universe. And you were saying that you believe that they could control their bodies and matter and energy with their mind, which I also believe is possible. Couldn't that be put to that they can control space-time with their mind if you were to, like, stretch it out further? So could you think that that could be what happened to some of these ancient civilizations, maybe like Atlantis, Lemuria, the Maya, that once they realized that everything, that all matter is energy and that they can change the energy with their minds, that they just decided to just pop out of this dimension? And one last thing real quick before I go is that I'm loving listening to all the stuff that you say, and I don't agree with everything that you said, but there's this other guy, David Icke. I also don't agree with everything that he said, but everything that you're saying, he's been saying for 30 years. So it's cool
to
say this new stuff.
All right, go ahead, Jared. Did you want to respond to the, you know, affecting space-time and flitting in and out of this reality?
Yeah, so for in the last 5 years and even longer, the questions are, why did they disappear, or was there inner fighting? Because there's the story of the conflict that was witnessed over Nuremberg, over the Baltic, and there's the lithographic plate of what appeared to be an aerial combat. The conflict over the Roman armies at the turn of the right at like AD 30 or BC 30, it seems to me that the survivors of what was the remnant of this advanced society did not get along, or don't get along, or didn't get along, and now there's one group or multiple groups, and they're live and let live or not. And so you got to wonder, as a worldwide society that had a balance that could manage the frequencies and technologies, where you're managing your health and regenerative cellular technology, where what happens when it's hit by a cataclysm where what we think of as entertainment centers like Greek and Roman amphitheaters were really frequency and resonance centers, where not only are you experiencing a play, but retuning cellular systems on a mass scale that is no longer possible. What is the chaos within a society that's experienced peace for maybe millions of years or thousands of years or hundreds of thousands of years? What do they digress or turn on each other and turn into? And or through what we're just learning about, the idea of the singularity near, the idea of man and machine not needing a genetic cellular structure the way we have it, but diamondoid crystalloid or some other cellular structure that would indicate that eventually, why would you even choose to have a body? Would you live in a virtual or online world? And would you not have a physical body? Are we looking at megalithic structures as physical entities when what we're really looking at are massive Earth-plugged-in flash drives in a technology?
Okay, I know there's so much more there, but I just want to try and squeeze in more. Pardon the interruption. Mike is in Denver, Colorado. Mike, go ahead.
Good morning, Richard. Thank you so much for taking my call. And Jared, first of all, thank you so much for your research and efforts on this subject. And I really enjoy your YouTube channel. So thank you very much. And I had a comment and a question tonight.
Well, so, you got time for a real quick question, Mike, if you could.
Sure,
sorry.
Sure. So just very quickly, when we look at the structures like the Great Pyramids, places like Angkor Wat, the stone circles, you know, it's obviously been speculated by a lot of people that these were energy-generating structures. And, you know, most notably by frequent coast-to-coast guest Michael Tellinger. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the possibilities that these stone circles and structures, could the energy that was being generated from them, could it have been being used for otherworld, as an otherworld communication device to communicate with, like, other life forms outside of this Earth?
All right. Good question, Mike. Thank you. And, Jared, just a heads up, we've got about 2 minutes here. Sorry.
Well, thanks.
Always fighting the clock.
So thank you for everything you said and subscribing to Not Aliens and listening to me on my other stuff. And the question is a great one because it also addresses the fact that wouldn't a society that could manage living rock, we haven't even talked about that, but the idea that they've already left the planet, that they had already sent out satellites, that some of the signals that are coming back to the planet, including even either going to the moon or going to Mars or going to other planets or having another experience off this planet, we have to assume that we are not the first human travelers that have left the planet, and that it's very likely that the technologies that these people would have already had would be continuously currently or have had in the past sent signals back to us from their explorations. We can't assume that they're either here in exact human form or a sliver of truth, just to touch on what we were talking about in the last question, regeneration through reincarnation. The sliver of truth may be the collective human consciousness storing as a backup every human entity or every human consciousness. So the idea of rebirth and animation, you know, your frog, it may be more true that this outside of human body experience includes a genetic backup for all of us, including our past societies, even within lesser animals or creatures that we don't think as being more conscious, but as maybe a zip file for...
All right. We'll have to leave it there, Jared. It's not us. It's not aliens. Worse, it's us. And again, the YouTube channel, It's Not Aliens or Not Aliens.
Yep. And same on Rockfin and Conflict Radio on YouTube. I co-host that. So that's also one to come and catch me on also.
Fantastic. Jared, a great delight. Thank you so much. We'll have to do it again.
I can't wait. Thank you, Richard.
Jared Murphy. All right. When we come back, the ancient language of sacred sound, the acoustic science of the divine with David Elkington on Coast to Coast AM.